Good afternoon. This is Kirk Miller, and we are welcoming you to Observations for Our Times. Today, I'll be joined by Larry and Scott, and we're going to carry on a little while on where we left off last week, starting with Proverbs 6 and working our way up to about 6:16. And we thought we'd do a little review just to get us up to speed and make some, and once again, they cover some observations that we've had individually as we've read these verses as well. And Larry, what I was going to start with is I was going to read just real quickly 6:9. We'll read most of these verses leading up to the seven things that Yahweh hates. And along the way, we can pick out a few little words because I have been quite flabbergasted by how many references there are to Paul and to death, the plague of death that we find in things that I never would have thought we would find in so many verses. Where the first time, I think you may recall that the first time we all heard about Chabaruch, remember when he said that Yahweh calls him the plague of death, and that was just mind-blowing. Or at least it was for me. And then now it seems like everywhere you go, if you translate a little bit deeper, you'll find that he keeps calling it the plague of death and plague of death and plague of death. And Christianity, the plague of death, is just amazing.
You know, one of the things that I dug up last week was that the son of Benjamin,
mm-hmm.
his first son was Adar. I'd shared that with Craig. Actually, Lisa had found it. And do you know this name Adar is tied to the sun at high noon, and it's also tied to Moloch. The first son of Benjamin. You gotta love it. And of course Paul says he's a Benjamite, you know, so you gotta love it. You just
I tell you
it.
Every time you the more you dig, the more it's, Yahweh talks very, very plainly. Let me go over a couple of things. I'm going to read 6:9 for just a minute. So now I know we covered a lot of this last week. However,
yes.
Just to get us up to speed, Proverbs 6:9 states that for how long and to what extent, inactivity, apathetic and lethargic one, will you lie there and remain inactive? When and what will it take for you to arise and stand up from your altered state of awareness? And we talked at great length on that. And what I was doing as I've been digging up each one of the words, not only just translating them in the normal sense through the lexicons, but I also was looking up the ancient Hebrew meanings of some of the words. And there's where it's translated, how long until you arise up.
Mate.
Mm-hmm, mate and ad. The mate in the ancient root comes from MT, and it means chaos and a mark. And I'm thinking the mark of the beast. I'm thinking chaos as in Babylon.
As in confusion. Yeah, perfect. And why wouldn't you name your book after Babylon as in Bible? Yeah,
and
sure.
And so it's, obviously it's an unknown duration of time. That's why he's saying how long. But it's also one of the meanings is mortal man subject to death. I mean, you just wouldn't think to find those things, but the deeper you dig, you dig. Because remember, the context of this is we're talking about Paul, or we're talking about people who are listening to this horrible Babylon, this horrible confusion. And then when you have ad, the second word, I think it really goes ad mate. It's not only a long period of time, but the actual letters mean see the door, enter, and meet. And a lot of this I found was, it mentions this a lot of times, where it's the doorway to life and, or keeping people from going into the doorway to life when you start analyzing all the words. It's quite profound. Shakab, now Shakab is a little bit later down when it says, when will you remain inactive? It means to rest and sleep, but another meaning for that is copulation. And the context of this would be the way I'm translating. The context would be of sleeping with the whore of Babylon. It's a metaphor, obviously. We're not talking about sex, but it's the whole thing is warning you, don't go there. Don't be captured by these people. Don't be captured by that confusion. And then this, the other little thing that got, grabbed me on that particular verse was, when will you arise, which is a qualm. Arise yourself, stand up. And I just made a note to myself, you know, this is not someone saying, when will you bow down to me? He's saying, stand up, like it always is. It's another confirmation that God wants somebody to walk with him, looking at him eye to eye, not bowing and scraping.
Then yeah, what I did, of Sadak, you, being upright.
Being upright, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Everywhere he goes, he says, walk with me, stand with me. Everywhere Yahusha went, he said, walk with me.
I don't think, you know, I mean, when Yahweh is constantly tearing down the pillars of religion, which is mm-hmm. really what I think the story of Samson was about in the end, you know. But he's constantly doing these things by over and over and over and over again in this constant repeat of stand up. Let's have a real relationship. Let's lose the religion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's so hard about that for people, but it seems to be the big issue. That's where the fight always occurs, isn't it? It's
yeah.
in the nature of the relationship.
Well, you know, in the ongoing debate, as you're involved with, and discussions that I have with people, and just discussions as I have with myself thinking about these things, it is the evidence is just becoming overwhelming. You cannot make God say something different.
Based on all this study and all the things you've looked at, see, I've become convinced of this.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have to read any of Paul's letters to understand he's a false prophet.
Mm-hmm.
You just read Yahweh's words explaining him.
Yeah.
What he says after that doesn't even matter, because Yahweh's already outed him hundreds mm-hmm. of different times by the time he ever writes his first letter. Right?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking as you're saying that, you know, if you know where the right path is, it's academic if somebody comes up with 29 other trails. I don't care how
sure.
they may be. This is the right path. It's right here. Here are the marks along the way. If you're not walking this path, you're not walking with me. Case closed. So everything else, I don't care how many different variations you have of from the adversary, they should be obvious. It ain't that one. Guy used to say, you know, you throw down a bunch of sticks, you should be able to, and they're all crooked, and one of them is straight, you should be able to pick out the straight one. It just ain't that hard.
I would think so.
But you got to put a little effort in it. That's basically what we're saying here in 6:10, where Yahweh says a little inactivity leads to a little laziness, to folding one's hands together in a lethargic manner to rest. Now, there's nothing wrong with rest, except that if you're going to ignore everything, if you're not going to do any of the work on our part, as far as getting to know Yah, to get to know his, have a relationship with him, if you're not going to look around and see what horrible things are there, then you're heading for a lot of trouble. And I made a little note to myself, if y'all can indulge me. I looked up Yah, Yod, the symbol for the open hand, and the door, and a yod does the work. Hands allow movement to in and out of the tent door, and it opens a tent door. And versus, say, let's say, folding your hands, well, you can't do anything with folded hands. Now, that kind of triggers something with me, because you've had a lot of conversations and I with you about you have to do something. A relationship is built on two parties participating. If you're going to just lie there and be a bump on a log, you're wasting your time. There's no relationship there. So, once again, he kind of discusses the same thing. Now, in 6:11, he says, for he will come walking and behaving like a leader or a guide, taking control, and you will lack what is needed. And we have a scarcity of something absolutely vital, needing what you do not have, causing you to bereave and to be diminished. What do you suppose he's talking about there?
He's clearly talking about a man, he,
mm-hmm.
right, that's going to come walking and behaving like a leader or a guide. He's talking about a religious leader.
Right.
And you'll lack the knowledge to understand what he's saying is a lie. And for that reason, you're going to be diminished. And diminished in this case means die. That's
right.
What it means. It's right. As simple as that. And, you know, you were talking about a door here just a moment ago, or mm-hmm. we were in Proverbs. And, you know, one of the more interesting things when you look at the flood is that you begin to understand that there's not three decks on this ark. There's one, you know, there's three doors he's talking about. And,
mm-hmm.
and of course, the religious notion that it's either love me or burn in hell forever, or the other rabbinic religious notion, either, you know, you're amplified into the next life or you're completely desist. Both of those are wrong. In fact, Fred and I was having this conversation today because, mm-hmm. You know, the soul is not immortal in the Nefesh unless Yahweh makes it so, and he has to do something, and he's only going to do that for the people he knows. So the others are going to be diminished or die. But and those who actively deceive, he says he will not fail to punish. Now, since everybody dies, right,
right.
A temporal death, or at least nearly.
Mortal man, yeah.
Yeah, then that's not the punishment because, you know, some of the most vicious animals in the world have died very wealthy men.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not some big punishment here on earth. Their punishment will come in that they will wish to die, like in Dabarim, when he's talking about men that go out and advance the names of pagan gods and put them in his mouth. In other words, saying our God is grace, or the grace, you were saved through grace and faith, which are two
mm-hmm.
gods, goddesses, actually. And the Holy Spirit, holy was the consort to Krishna, the Eastern sun goddess, and that to this day is still it's a sun festival called Holi.
Right.
And that has, of course, nothing to do with being set apart or Kodesh. So that's what he's talking about here. I mean, as simple as that, these people are going to be diminished. They're going to go into that door, which most people go into. They didn't actively deceive anybody, but they were deceived by this guy that came walking and acting like a guide and a leader, Paul in this case, and they're going to be diminished. That means they're going to die.
Yeah. Well, and the only way we can avoid that, of course, is the thing that we are most lacking always is knowledge of the Torah. So, you know, he's trying to tell you now that in order to get any knowledge of the Torah, you're going to have to read it. You're going to have to study it. So once again, you cannot be idle on this because when he comes in, you'll just be totally unarmed. You'll have no shield whatsoever.
Have you ever heard Yahweh's words before?
I hear them in the Torah.
Yeah, well, then you have, haven't you? I just don't know where else you would hear them.
No. The only place you could other that you make that argument, you could say, and unfortunately they're written in Greek, is where Yahusha, who quoted him constantly, which is amazingly contrary to what most Christians think, most everything he said was a quote from the Torah, and or an explanation
or the prophets or the Mishmar, one or the other. I mean, you know.
But that's it.
I
don't know where else you're going to find it. Everything else is twisted. So anyway, as we lead up to this, we've got 611, which is a confusing and incorrect man, which that fits Paul to the T, an unjust, a dishonest, a evil, and a vain man, egotistical, deceitful, that's Paul again, an individual who travels about with speeches which are wrong, false, crooked, perverting, and corrupting. That's Proverbs 6:12. And
yeah, and the guy who did all the follow, all the, you know, of all the Nabi and all that
mm-hmm.
that Yahweh ever talks about, the one that does, you know, I mean, his whole thing was how he traveled around everywhere. It's
right.
Funny how they throw he travels about, halak.
Well, you know, we went on last week and we itemized or itemized every trip that we are sure he's gone on. And my gosh, this man traveled everywhere. And then we compared it to all the other evil people who tried to corrupt Yah's word and twist it. And there's no one comparable whatsoever that attacked the Torah that traveled around everywhere like he did. He covered just about the entire Roman Empire. So
it's amazing.
If you're looking for who this is, it's Paul.
And you know, when you talk about, I just want to backtrack just a little bit here. When you go back to Chabahu, better known as Habachuk today, which means embrace this. You know, he talks about a guy named Sheol. It talks about his soul. So, you know, when somebody translates that Sheol, you know, Sheol is not a he with a soul. That's a place, you know.
Right.
So, and he talks about this guy that's going to go out and he's going to talk in circles about circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to talk around and about it in funny sort of ways, and that he's going to be weighed down with all this heavy muck and mud, which, you know, he's talking about religion, you know, and that he's going to constantly be on the run. And Paul was always talking about running. I always felt like, and then it gets into some other, that he's proud and puffed up. I mean, I have never, you know, go read Malachi, go read Zechariah, you know, go read Yahshua. These, you don't really know much about these guys. It's more like, you know, here I was in the second month of the eighth year, or the eighth month of the second year of King Darius of Persia, and Yahweh's words came to me, and boom, here we go. You know, they just start writing. You know, they never talk about how they're a rabbi's rabbi, or they never talk about how they're so knowledgeable. You know, they don't talk about things like that. They go, you know, I'm transmitting the words of Yahweh is what they say, and then that's all you really end up knowing about them.
Yeah.
You know, based on their work, on the writings, the dictation that they took. And so when they say proud and puffed up and always running his mouth and, you know, claiming to be something he's not, and all these things. I mean, and then he names him Sheol, and then he also said that he would be present during the fulfillment of the Moed Mikra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we know Paul was in a cleric school there in Jerusalem at that time. And so we sit there and we look at that stuff and we say, well, there's only one man it can be. And it said he will mislead most Gentiles from all over the planet. Now, who else could that be?
I mean, well, nobody else went after the Gentiles. I mean, you can't call Akiba didn't do that. He didn't care. Certainly didn't get it out of
the family. He was misleading people from within the family.
Yeah.
That's what he was doing. Yep.
He was going after the brothers.
Yep, that's right.
And that's even referred to in here somewhere along the line. I forget exactly which verse.
Well, we'll get to it. But yeah, anyway, I don't mean to get you off track, but I'm just saying.
No, that's quite right. No, that's
so dead on perfect. I always felt like that was one of the most astounding, breathtaking, highly accurate prophecies of all time, and people just overlook it like it doesn't exist. It's amazing to me.
Well, you've got a wicked man, a dishonest man, an evil man, a perverted man, a corrupting man with speeches on 6:12, and you've got who else can it be? I mean, there's no one who he tells us all those things about himself.
Yeah, he does. He's a sexual pervert. And he's demon possessed. He claims
he says he lies.
Yeah, says he lies.
He defines himself as a rather evil guy. You know, he held everybody while they were being killed, stoned to death. He's carrying the coats. I mean, how many things do you need to do before you go, Wait a minute. This is, but I like your point about the most of the prophets and most everyone that I can think of, they tell you very little about themselves. They're just like honest reporters. They say, okay, I was told to come and give you this message. Here it is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's not a big
fanfare. Look at me. I'm wonderful. I bring this message, and everybody thinks I'm glorious.
Yeah, I mean, it's straight up. And, you know, when you talk about lies, you know, just I just want to straighten this out over, you know, Paul over in Corinthians said he was a liar. Mm-hmm. And what he says, they've truncated this in the religious stuff to try to take the edge off of it by saying, I've become all things to all men, you know. You know, what he really said is to the Jewish, I came to exist like a Jew in order to take advantage of and profit from Jews. And to those under the Torah, nomos, I acted as if I was under the Torah, not that I myself actually existed under the Torah, in order to take advantage and make a profit of those under the Torah. And to the Torah-less, nomos, I was like the lawless, a nomos, Torah-less, really is what it means. Not being God's Torah-lessness, but to the contrary, subject to the law of Maaseiah. What lawlessness could ever be associated with God to begin with? This is so stupid. In order to take advantage and profit from the Torah-less. So I became weak and sick to the weak in order to take advantage of the weak. Wow. And profit from the weak, and I became every kind of person, in order to save everyone. Wow. So he took advantage of them so he could gain and profit, but, you know, he felt like he was saving them in the process, and he lied to everybody he ever met and became a chameleon.
Yeah. That's the real version of
what we have on the oldest parchment or papyrus we have from him, and it doesn't say I became all things to all men. That's what it says. Yeah, kind of worth mentioning there.
No, I think so. And once again, those out there listening, we're just reviewing. Unfortunately, Yad is not with us today, and so we thought we'd review this and then get up to 6:16 here pretty soon, but let's take a quick look at some odd things that I found. And let me see what your comments would be on 6:13. I'll read 6:13 first. It says, "And with a sinister winking, with a sinister winking of his eyes, he subtly signals the vacillating nature of his proclamations by shuffling about regarding circumcision, Malal, and all the while casting aspersions with his fingers." And I looked through most of those words. We talked about that in depth on the previous show, but there was a couple of things that were quite interesting, I thought. I looked up winking, which is karatz, and one of the oldest root meaning from the Q and the R is to gather men, arranging them, bringing them together, gathering them by accident or by purchase or slavery. What I was doing is I was writing down the things that most personified Paul's approach. And it's even the simplest little words, just winking, all Hebrew words, or most Hebrew words will have both a positive and a negative side. But in the context of who we know he's talking about already, he's made it very clear. He's talking about this sinister person that we have identified as Paul. Every little word seems to cry it out. It's amazing. And then with Ayin, which is with his eyes, is also from conceit and a word for conceited, which identifies Paul once again. Now, we talked a lot last week about Malal being circumcision, from the same word as circumcision. And so the only person that rails against circumcision for the family would be Paul.
Yeah, and off of P46, just so anybody who thinks that they've got some older version, P46 is about 500 years older than the extant Aramaic you can get, which really only goes back to about the 6th century. And P46 was within 100 years of his life. I mean, it's just simply the oldest stuff there is. And in P46, he said he wished all under the Torah would be castrated. Castrated. Mm. And then if I go back
to... He's a really angry fellow, isn't he?
Yeah, to Chabakuk, 2:15-16, Yahweh says this about this man. He says, "Woe to the one who provides and causes and allows his neighbors and companions or countrymen to drink and thereby associating them with venomous wrath, but also making them drunk." And that's, in other words, making them irrational. You know, talking about literally getting them drunk. But he says, "For the purposes of observing their genitals, ma'or."
Well, he's told us he's a pervert. you know?
Yeah, you know. And then he says, when you get your fill and shame of infamy instead of honor and glory, inebriated in addition, you also show yourself unacceptable using circular reasoning to advance the lack of circumcision. That's the way I translate that. So he's using circular reasoning to try to undermine, and this is Chabawook, and he's talking about the same guy here now in Proverbs or the Masal 6:13, and what is he talking about there again? Circumcision, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Talking around it.
Well, you understand, and maybe everyone in the audience doesn't understand, but you understand that the minute you destroy a circumcision as an act, physical act, then that person cannot participate in, or male
Passover.
Person cannot participate
you can't even
in Passover.
Enter the narrow doorway.
You can't participate in Passover, you're doomed. That's the door.
Yeah, you're finished right there.
Yeah,
matter of fact,
it's a non-starter.
Yeah, we're told not even to invite any male
right.
who's uncircumcised
right.
into our homes to participate in it.
Right.
Isn't that true?
Absolutely.
Well, there you go.
And now, obviously, once you go through that door, you will live forever. But unfortunately, if your sins are not removed, that's matzah the next day. If you're not celebrating that. As we're getting closer and closer to that time, if you're not celebrating that, then it avails you nothing to be alive eternally if you can't be with Yah, because that means you can only be one place, and that's with Hasatan. So, but you can't even get started along this journey until you're circumcised. As
right, and yet he's shuffling about regarding circumcision, and the reason he says he's shuffling about talking around, no argument here.
I mean, it is or it isn't. So.
Yeah, right. But remember, because he was so embarrassed at the Jerusalem summit, he had to go circumcise his boyfriend. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Young Timothy, the only man he ever loved.
And of course, he was circumcised as well.
Yeah, so he went and had to circumcise him, even though he fought against it. Then he ended up having to do it because of straight embarrassment. You know, I mean, they had him. There was no way he was going to talk his way around that when he was talking to, you know, elders like Shimon, as an example, or Yalkanan. I mean, you can't talk your way out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to relent, but then as soon as he got away from them, what did he start doing? Running down circumcision again. And that goes right back to the way the guy said, well, you know, if I was around the people that observed the Torah, I pretended to be under the Torah. And that's how he looked at the Torah, too.
It's very convenient when he needs it for his argument.
Yeah, it was just a burden to him.
Kind of like a politician today with the Constitution. They'll quote it only if it pertains to what they're saying.
Yeah, why they break it in half the rest of the time that they're governing.
Or ignore it completely.
Absolutely.
I wanted to throw one more interesting word in that that I looked up that I thought kind of revealing. And most of this is just my digging up a little deeper to find a little something. And it may not interest everyone, but it certainly tickles me when I run across something like this. But in this verse, we said the nature of his proclamations by shuffling about regarding circumcision with his stance, all while casting aspersions. Now, the with his stance was regal. So I looked up regal, which is usually translated in English Bibles with his feet, which is fine. But it's and obviously a leg is the terminal part of your, you know, the terminal part with your feet is the terminal part of your leg, rather. But you also find in the oldest definitions, it also refers, that word refers to be afoot on walking through a foreign land, which is telling, usually in the sense of spying. It's also walking to trample. Oh, I'm sorry.
Like a wolf in sheep's clothing.
To trample another with the tongue.
Okay.
Where would you find that definition in a Bible? I mean, in a dictionary, if you were looking up feet. Amazing stuff you can find.